You're listening to the premier podcast for professional leaders by other professionals. We're going to be talking to the best of the biz about what they've learned along the way in their careers. We'll be giving you easy to understand tips that you can take and impact your business. Let's go. Okay, welcome back to another episode of 343. This is Kirk Clyden, your host, and today we have guest Matt Keeler. Matt is the Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Walnut Creek Foods, which is a family-owned food manufacturing, distribution, and retail business in Walnut Creek, Ohio. In his role, Matt develops and pushes forward new initiatives that help grow the Walnut Creek brand. And prior to this time in the food industry, Matt worked for 6 years in a variety of positions at Vail Resorts, where he did some managing digital of, the managing of digital projects and the operations of central reservations for the call center for Breckenridge Ski Resort. So Matt currently lives in Worcester, Ohio with his wife of 13 years and a son that's 5 years old, and they are expecting a second child coming up next month. So congratulations on that, Matt, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kirk. Glad to be here.
So Matt, before we get started on some of the tips that we have here, and I'll set this up, I want to find out, how did you go from one industry in the skiing industry and tourism completely different in a lot of ways? How did that happen?
That's a great question. They're definitely not the same, very different in terms of how they're structured. But my wife and I lived out in Colorado right out of college and kind of just fell into the ski industry and tourism and leisure and developed a lot of good experience there. And then we'd been there for about close to 7 years, decided to move back to Ohio to be around family. And upon coming back here, I found myself working for a digital agency, and one of our clients was actually Walnut Creek Foods. And Walnut Creek, they had an opening in their marketing department, had experience working with me, and asked if I wanted to come over and work for them. And so definitely something that kind of just fell into existence and wasn't something that I really seeked out. But it's been actually really nice, here being in the food industry in Holmes County. We're also very reliant upon tourism and hospitality with all the visitors that we get. I've actually been able to use a lot of that knowledge that I developed out in Colorado to help with, marketing of our stores and also just in general, working with the chamber and understanding kind of the best ways to market and to partner with the chamber.
Yeah. Well, did you have any experience within the food industry before you came into it? Was it anything that you touched with in the skiing resorts or was that new to you?
Completely new. I mean, other than I love food, so I had that, experience of eating a lot of food. But yeah, in terms of actually working in the food industry, I had zero experience before I started at Walnut Creek.
Yeah. And tell me, how many years have you been with Walnut Creek?
A little over 5 years now.
Okay.
So, yep. And here at Walnut Creek, I first started heading up our marketing team. And then that grew into, for a couple year period, we needed some help on our customer service team there and use a lot of my experience managing call centers in Colorado during that time. And then here in the last year, passed that on to someone else. And then I'm now also managing our sales team.
So I'm glad, Matt, that you had a few years of experience within this industry before you hit 2020, because this year has changed everything. I think it's changed everything for a lot of people. Certainly in the food industry, there's been, food's a necessity, of course. It's something that everyone relies upon. And they rely upon companies like yours to be able to provide sustenance and keep things running smoothly. So the general population needs companies like yours to continue working and to have a little bit of experience. I'm sure provided you at least the ability to rely upon what you have from the past year to be able to move forward, but also to be able to shift in convenient ways. So that's really what we're going to talk about today a little bit. Things that you've learned from the COVID pandemic and things that you've changed or have not changed. And I think that's something that we want to share with our audience today so that they can pick it up, whether they're within a similar industry or whether they're completely different. It's one of the things I love about talking with the leaders of organizations is that no matter what perspective we come from, there's always something that we can pick up from a different one. And it's those commonalities that we may not have thought of before that really help us out. So Matt, I'm going to throw it over to you. Give us one thing, the first thing of three that you've learned from what we've gone through in the past couple of months.
Yep. So I guess before I start the first one here, I will just mention, you know, there have been a lot of things that we've learned. Some of them have been short-term learnings or things that have happened that are very just in the now, not necessarily long-term trends, shifts in management or, you know, ways that we've gone to market that are, I think are longer-term trends. And so those are really the things that I want to focus on for us here today. So the first one through all of this is that it shouldn't really take major events like a pandemic to force change within an organization. And raise your hand if you've had to scramble to figure things out when COVID started. I think I'll raise both of my hands. But what I came to realize was that there's a lot of things that we were scrambling to do that maybe deprioritized for one reason or another. And the pandemic really forced our hand to make those things happen. And so I think that's the first one for me is just really, you know, what are those things that you look back now that when all this started, were you just scrambling and felt like you were trying to get done? And what of those things could have been done before and why didn't you do them? And what were the reasons of why you didn't make those things happen? You know, for us, some of it was, making work from home. For some companies, work from home is an easy transition. They had all the tools in place to make that happen. For others, it was an IT fire drill and, you know, trying to get that all figured out. And so, that would be my first one, that you found yourself scrambling to get done at the beginning there that maybe you didn't have to, you wouldn't have had to do that.
Well, I think the lesson that's learned here that I think applies to all of us is that change is hard, you know, mm-hmm. And this is a period where some of us have been forced to change, and that's a good thing. I think that we've had to say to ourselves, we had to reevaluate and say, all right, what do we have to do now to make ourselves better? Okay, what do you have for the next part?
Yeah, the second one, this is a little more kind of putting, you know, my branding hat on and how we spend our marketing dollars and how we've kind of had to reassess all of that. But, you know, we live in an influencer culture. And I think this with everything that's gone on is more true now than ever. And now is really the time to be investing in and supporting core influencers that you would have for your brand. You know, I'll tell a story, I guess, to start out. So I remember one day I got back from work, my wife had a package. I grabbed it outside, brought it in. She opened it up. And it was these hair ties, just these simple kind of, I don't know what's special about them, and they said they don't snag, you know, with your hair. And anyways, before you knew it, my wife was telling all of her friends that she needs to that they should buy these hair ties. She was buying hair ties and handing them out to people and essentially became a sales consultant for these hair ties with zero benefit to us. But I think really what that did was just illustrate a growing trend out there that we haven't really done in the past a good job of capturing, which is that influencer marketing. And really there is a lot of opportunity. And I think the biggest thing is identifying who you're wanting to influence, who that market is, and then finding those people that are influencing the decisions that they make. And so that's something that recently we've been going through. And so that's what I would encourage for other people too, is really during this pandemic, try new channels, such as influencer marketing. I think you'd be surprised how it works out for you.
So we'll put on we'll put on our marketing hats for just a moment here. And for those of you that are listening that aren't familiar with influencer marketing, it's certainly heavily connected with the social media marketing campaigns out there. And something that we've talked with a lot of our clients about, and how to maximize that, how to get people that are giving that editorial promotion of it. As Matt said, having someone that is not necessarily a salesperson acting as on that front. And so I think a big question for a lot of people, a lot of owners out there, people in the marketing position, wondering, how do you get started in influencer marketing, and can you tell us a little bit about how you started that process and if there's any specifics that might help others that are thinking about that?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, we identify that that's something that we wanted to do. So that's really the initial decision you need to make as a company. The second thing we did was just start asking people that would be our demographic, like people that we would, you know, want to be influencing their decisions. Who are you following? You know, who Who are you listening to? And then we spent about a month of actually just following those people on their channels, just to look at their content and just to get to know them personality wise. I think there's an aspect of making sure that their values line up with your values. And so we went through that for about a month of just following these people and then started contacting them, figuring out ways that we could work together where it's really more just they're talking to people about our brand in a way that, you know, their audience, I think, trusts them. And so, yeah, those would just be some tips I would mention.
Yeah. And I really think that research that you mentioned, I think it was the second thing that you mentioned after the fact of, is this something that you do want to know, is so critical that you don't just jump into it. You look at a number and say, okay, I want Bob Smith over here to represent me. It's a matter of listening, making sure that voice is in line with the people that you want to communicate with. And then finding people that are going to do that with some sort of honesty and authenticity, right? We're not just chasing someone to promote a message out there. We want someone that actually can be a participant in our brand. And so one, I guess one other follow-up question for you, Matt, and as you develop those relationships with some of those influencers, how long do those last? Do you set a campaign and you have a start and a finish to it, or is it more of a fluid ongoing process?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess I don't really know to answer you because it's something we're just starting to get going with, but you know, the way that we've at least approached it is, hey, you know, let's at least for one time, let's try to partner on some content and see how it goes. And then if we feel like, again, that's kind of our second check there is, let's see how that goes. And then if that goes well, looking at, you know, year commitments with someone, just saying, all right, for the next, we're going to commit to you if you, you know, and we're not asking for exclusivity, but in terms of the food space that we would kind of be their primary brand that they're talking about. And if they stick. And so yeah, that's how we're going about it.
Any particular channels that you've had certain success with, or is it still too early to tell?
Instagram is really good. But most of our influencers that we have are on both Instagram and YouTube. So they're basically putting their content in both places. And so that's what I'll be most interested in long-term is to see which of those channels seem to produce the most success for us.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're into TikTok at all, but it's starting to get into that arena as well, and some interesting results. So it's always fascinating to me to see what the new latest things out there, how those are going to impact from a marketing perspective, because it always happens. You know, they get their feet wet, they get their content producers out there, and then eventually it comes into a marketing perspective.
And I'll just mention one more thing, kind of back to the whole idea of using the pandemic, but as a way to ship dollars. But I think so often when things are going fine, you know, it's easy to just continue doing what you're doing. Now there's not a lot of events aren't happening. So we're not getting requests to sponsor events. And we're, you know, there's a lot of things like that where we have monies that, you know, we can allocate. And so it's such a good time to just start trying out some of these new avenues and new things. And yeah, it's actually really exciting for us.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. I'll jump on that bandwagon and then we'll move on to the next one. But just for a moment, we've got a lot of our clients that are that would have been exhibiting in a trade show in the past 4 months, and all of that got canceled. And we're helping them figure out, okay, what do you do now? Because you're right. You do have, first of all, you've got budgets that should be spent on getting your message across. But second of all, you've got audiences out there that still need to hear what you're trying to tell them. How do we get that through to them? So good stuff, Matt. Well, let's shift over to your third point then.
Yeah. So the last one is something that I'll admit that I'm stealing from Craig Rochelle. I don't know who all, you know, is familiar with him, but he would have talked about this the moment I heard it. I'm like, yeah, that's us. That's me. That's just kind of how we think. So I wanted to bring it up. I think it's a good way to make it tangible. So, you know, spending additional resources, but at some point the returns diminish. But what I'm also saying is there's an element there where you can, on a lot of things, spend too much time trying to get it just perfect, and the opportunity cost of waiting that extra time far outweighs the benefit that you're getting for spending more time. That idea of good enough to move on, I think you can apply in a lot of ways, whether it's in, you know, marketing projects that you're doing. Obviously, if you're going through like a branding project or anything, I mean, that needs to be detailed. That needs to be well thought through. But the day-to-day things that we're doing, sometimes it's just good enough to move on and, you know, to keep things moving forward. And so that's just something we've really applied here, especially during this, you know, COVID time period.
Yeah, we see that all the time in the creative field. You know, designers and writers, we want to get things perfect. And the ability to say to yourself, okay, right now, I could keep working on this. I could keep tweaking it. I mean, it goes back to those of us that are artists, our days in art school, where you want to keep adding a little bit of shading here, a little bit of coloring there. And you, at some point, you have to say, this is finished. And as you say, good enough to move on. Yep. So that's some good information, Matt, and some good tips. Thank you for that. And I hope that is good for our listeners as well. All right, so to wrap this up, I've got three questions for you. Have to do with your industry, and I'm going to guess you're going to do pretty good with this, Matt. These all come from within the industry, and I think you're going to do fine with this year. So the first one, fairly simple, and some of this data comes from a year or 2 years ago. This particular piece comes from 2018. And that is, which of the following food categories represents the largest sector of food manufacturing? And this is U.S. based. And so options for this is A, dairy, B, seafood, C, fruits and vegetables, or D, meats.
Whew. Like I said, I'm new to the food industry, so let's just preface all my answers with that. I want to say it's dairy or meat. I'll go with option one, dairy.
You know what? You are close. It was actually meats. It was your other option. Yeah.
That was me saving myself. Okay.
There you go. Yeah. So that's something that may be different. This is U.S. based, and what you see, obviously you're focusing within Ohio. And how far out does Walnut Creek Foods reach go?
Yeah, we would actually distribute now on our trucks 19 different states. So we're going as far west as Kansas, north to Minnesota, and then as far east as New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay. Well, so speaking of the different states, I mean, I think most people know that California has the most food and beverage manufacturing in the U.S. Ohio, in contrast to that, has the ninth most in the country. So other than California, we've got seven states in the mix here. Can you name three of the states between California and Ohio that manufacture more food than Ohio?
Oof. Well, let's think about this. Any kind of food, right? So we're talking anything. So
correct. It
could be grains or anything like that. Iowa? Maybe no.
I'm giving you visual clues.
Yeah, that's a no. All right, Kurt's helping me here. Let's go with
big size,
yeah. Probably Montana might be up there. And how about Missouri?
Boy.
Did I offer it?
I'm sorry. So I'm trying to give you a little clue. So I was thinking, think size, what's the biggest state? Texas. Yeah, Texas is definitely going to come in there. Yeah.
See, I'm thinking of states that we distribute to. So I'm thinking, we pick up a lot of oats and we pick up flour in these states, and that's where it's coming from. But no, that makes sense. Texas, a lot of beef and cattle and other things going on there.
Well, you know, you mentioned dairy, and if I had given you, if you thought about that clue, because dairy was definitely one of the top foods that they manufactured in Ohio. What do you think of when you think of dairy? What's the big cheese state?
Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin was in there. And the list rounded out with Washington, which I was a little surprised at, Pennsylvania, Illinois, so we've got some close states to Ohio here, and then New York and Florida.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, let's knock this one out of the park here, Matt. Last one. All right, and that is this one really has to deal with a little bit more with what we think about, and that is the packaging and advertising All right. So whenever you buy something, it has a certain amount of claims on it, right? And these are the details that we think about when we create a package for different materials. All right. So in the latest data on this comes from 2016. So it's a little bit dated, but I think it's still pretty relevant. So according to the USDA, which is the number one claim on packaging? And I'll give you four choices.
Okay.
Gluten-free, kosher, low or no allergies, or that it has ethical or environmentally friendly packaging.
I'm going to say kosher.
Yep, you got it. You got it. By a long run, but I think it's interesting because those were the top four. So I gave you some hard choices there, but gluten-free and the allergies component, those are certainly rising the most.
Yeah.
But the one that you will appreciate, the biggest growth from 2009 is social media.
There you go.
In 2009, it was almost non-existent on packaging. And as of 2016, I believe it was about sixth on the list.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, great info. Thanks for making me look bad, but that's all right. That's why we're here. So good entertainment.
Well, you learned a little bit, and I think our audience learned a little bit about this too. But hopefully, some good takeaways. Well, Matt, hey, I appreciate you being on the show today, and I know this is going to be a great show.
Yep. Thanks, Kurt. Nice talking with you.